VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning, and it's hot. Yeah. That was a little different beginning, wasn't it? We have been spoiled so much this year, and I like it that way. But today, it's pretty much official. Welcome to summer in Florida. So, love it or leave it, I say. Anyway, it's Father's Day weekend, and everybody will be getting together and having some fun with their kids and grandkids and all that stuff. You can all start all that at about 11 o'clock as soon as you get done listening to us. How's that?
That works.
Well, it works for me. Okay, welcome back, everybody. The regulars, we always appreciate you being here. That's why we do this every week. And if you're new to the show, stick around and listen for a while. You never know. You might just learn something important. We've got an awful lot of stuff in our stacks today. Don't know how much we'll get through it or not, but we'll do it our way unless you want it your way. And all you have to do to get it your way and talk about what you'd like to talk about is to pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. 222-TALK. Easy way to remember it. You can program it into your phones. We will have a trivia question. We will have Adam doing the market wrap. And we've got a whole bunch of interesting things that are going on. It was a very strange week in the market. Look at some of the things that are going on. We had an interest rate increase that was shocking to no one, pretty much pre-announced, and yet, of course, the market reacts. Oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. And then he says, well, guess what? This isn't the last one. Oh, they're shocked again, even though that was all pre-known. But you know the market. The market loves volatility and reaction and all that stuff to scare people out of it. And then we had the dreaded T word come up again, tariff, and it is just completely and almost totally, in a modern sense, unrecognizable what the people's reaction is, what their memories are, what a tariff really is and what it isn't. And I'll get into some of that today and tell you why this is nothing that you should worry about. We also had the criminals back out, the big banks, on Friday, taking all the gains we've made in gold and silver and just chucking them away by shorting more of the precious metals than there actually exists on Earth. They're doing it over and over. One of these days, they're going to stop doing it. But I digress. Other than that, something I wanted to bring up for Adam. Last week, remember, you talked about why the Dow Jones Industrial Average is such a pathetic indicator of the market.
Yes, I did. And I posted a blog about it this week, too.
Oh, you did? Okay, yeah. We proved it. Well, the market proved it.
Exactly. That's a great illustration of it.
I thought maybe you had an influence or something, but you nailed it last week.
Well, it's always been true. It's not like it's some great insight that I have.
Great timing.
It's just, good timing. Lucky, I guess. It was basically a sideways week in equity trading again, which is fine. I'll take that at this point. Let the moving averages catch up, and we're in a bit of an uptrend. So I think I really like this market right now. The major indices were mixed. We had all the recent trends basically stayed in place this week. So the Dow was the loser, and that was all, as you mentioned, the posturing by the Trump administration, threatening more tariffs on China. At this point, it looks like neither Trump nor China wants to blink first. I can definitely see a scenario where the tariffs go into effect.
July 6th?
I think it'll be short-lived. Mm-hmm. But at this point, neither one wants to look like the loser. So,
the only thing worse than a China or somebody in that region losing face is us losing face to them.
Of course.
Because there goes all the respect out the window right then. You cannot back down.
Yeah, and well, Trump doesn't back down anyway, as we've seen. So,
well, they're better match.
That's not. It's kind of at a standoff at this point. It really, it's not even about tariffs. It's about intellectual property theft. And we need to get China to start enforcing, not allowing that to happen under their watch. And that would clear all of this up, in my opinion.
Right. Well, they've had no incentive.
No, not at all. They've been making billions of dollars off of
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
So it's, yeah, so the Dow lost 1%, or under 1%, actually, 226 points. And so really, when you put that in context of what the dollar amount of these tariffs are, that is basically nothing. The market shrugged it off. Even though it went down, it was almost nothing. The S&P started and ended the week at 2,779. Index changed just 0.6 of a point, not 0.6 of a percent, a point, 0% change.
Yeah.
And the NASDAQ, following the recent trend, was up 1.3% and hit an all-time high once again. It backed off a little bit on Friday, but still pretty near its all-time high. So that has been the trends that we've been seeing, the S&P kind of in the middle, NASDAQ leading the way, and the Dow being the laggard. That's been in place all year, well, most of the year, and we're still seeing it today.
How's that sell in May and go away thing working this year?
Yeah, that's never a good strategy.
No.
Any investment theory that's based on an old adage is not a sound theory.
Yeah, the month is looking good.
It is. So far, so good. There was a ton of news this week for such a little reaction by the market. As you mentioned, the Fed hiked the interest rates by another quarter point, bringing them up from criminally low all the way to ridiculously low. Mm-hmm. And at this rate, we should have rates that are in a reasonable level by about 2025, in my estimation.
If they do another one this year and four next year, I think the rates will be in a reasonable, usable range.
Yeah, I agree
about
with that.
About three.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good start.
Yeah. The savers will be rewarded for the first time since a lot of us can remember.
Yeah, and it's all relative. So it's starting to feel like we're getting rewarded a little bit when you look at bond yields and things like that. Compared to a year ago, we're definitely getting rewarded more than we were. So that's not bad news.
Well, I can't wait, because I would like to be able to, as a manager of other people's money, I would like to be able to deleverage and de-risk some portfolios.
Sure.
That involves moving some money out of risk assets into things like CDs, but I'm not going to do it at 1.75 either.
No, it doesn't make any sense. It's too low.
Inflation's, every measure of inflation is above that one now.
Oh, well, I'm just getting to that, actually.
Well, good.
However, the biggest economic data point we saw this week was retail sales. Remember just a few months ago when retail was dead?
Yep.
That didn't happen. Mm. In fact, it's really gaining steam right now. In May, retail sales rose 0.8%, and then revisions to prior months brought the total increase to 1%. That's in 1 month. Retail sales are now up 5.9% from a year ago. Why is that happening? Consumers are feeling good. They've got jobs. They're feeling secure.
And their paychecks are bigger.
Yeah, exactly. So you've got all of those things going on, and you're not seeing it in the wage growth, but I think demographics are to blame for that. But you haven't really seen it to the level that we would expect.
No, but it'll be coming. It's a lagging indicator.
Yeah, you also have to remember, every day we're losing 10,000, 12,000 highly paid baby boomers out of the workforce and replacing them with new entrants taking entry-level jobs. So I think that has a lot to do with it as well.
Me too. But wait, it'll start catching up, and pretty soon it's going to escalate the retail sales more and more. Speaking of retail, did you look at the restaurants and food?
Yeah, they had a nice month.
Yeah. There was a headline I caught this morning that was kind of interesting. It said, House of the Future, Kitchenless.
I don't know about that.
At the rate restaurant sales are perking up and grocery sales are falling, there are going to be people out there who really don't need one. You could build a heck of a house for with no kitchen for the same amount of money.
Yeah.
About a 20% off or something like that. But problem with that is that they wouldn't give you an occupancy permit, so don't do it. All right, we've got a lot to do. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And on this wonderful sunny Father's Day weekend, I want everybody to be careful out there. Make sure you stay hydrated, because like we said, it's a warm one out there. But nonetheless, a good day to get outside. All right, you want to wrap up anything on the market or delve into some new stuff?
No, I just had a couple of inflation numbers that came out. We saw the producer mm-hmm. price index and the consumer price index. The PPI beat expectations, came in at an increase of 0.5%. The target was 0.3, and producer prices are up 3.1% from a year ago. Definitely some inflationary pressure in the economy. And then the CPI was met expectations at 0.2%, and it's up 2.8% from a year ago. So we're seeing it on both sides.
Remember the caller who asked about tips a week or two ago?
Mm-hmm.
They're looking better every minute.
Of course. You're happy to say that, I'm sure.
I am. I have a rather nice little stash of those things. All right. One of the strange things, maybe not that strange, but one of the active things in our society today has to do with estate planning. And the concept of estate planning is morphing a little bit. It's getting into digital assets. Everybody has digital assets. They can be your bank accounts. They can be your Facebook page. It can be anything. And they're being handled now by particularly young people, but not only young people, as part of your assets. And those assets are always distributed. You tell your heirs what you want done by using a will or a trust. But Americans aren't tremendously good about having things like that. What percentage of Americans are intestate, as they say? In other words, you have no will and no trust set up. What percentage? I think we'll cut it down. Let's really narrow the range. It's over half and under 100%. How's that? Okay. Now, our little target range is there. So I'm going to be talking a little more about that, too. But first, you want to handle a topic, or shall I dive in?
Yeah. One of the most frequent questions that we've been getting lately is how to invest in marijuana. It is a growth industry. There's no doubt about it. You're seeing states legalize it at a pretty quick pace right now. California became the first in 1996, and that was just for medicinal purposes.
Mm-hmm.
It was followed by Alaska, Oregon, Washington, and that all happened in 1998. And then Colorado and Washington both legalized it for recreational use in 2012. Can you believe it's been that long?
I can't.
It seems like not that long ago. Florida, actually, medicinal use became legal in 2016. And
suddenly everyone got sick.
Yeah. Well, at this point, there are 5,400 new registered marijuana users per week in the state of Florida.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it's definitely a growth industry. There's no doubt about it. The North American Marijuana Index gained over 90% in 2017. It tracks 41 companies in the U.S. and Canada, and it is broken into three different areas. One is touching the plant. That includes cultivation, retail, hemp products, biotech, all of that things. Then there's direct support. So real estate, secondary services, and technical services, and then ancillary, consumption devices, investing in finance, and tech and media. So kind of an interesting way to look at things, but it really is a legitimate industry at this point. It's not huge, but it's legitimate.
No, it's easier to grow something small, as you know.
Yeah. The investments have surpassed $3 billion this year per Yahoo Finance. According to the Cannabis Deal Tracker, the deals for February passed $720 million in just 60 days this year. So that's pretty incredible.
It is indeed. So yep. Is it a good investment yet?
Yes and no. So the ways that we as investors can buy it are not great yet. And there's a reason for that. Because it's still illegal on a federal level, it makes it difficult to be listed on the NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange. And most of it can only be found on the over-the-counter pink slip exchanges, which are highly suspect at best.
Yeah, you can't see a market price just by logging on to something.
Correct. The government could crack down on states that have legalized it and force federal laws at any time. As unlikely as that is, it actually could happen. And there is taxes are a big issue because you cannot deduct your operation expenses because it's an illegal industry. So you basically pay, what your
tax on gross sales.
Yeah, exactly.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So that's a big downside, obviously.
That's where I think the feds are wanting to go with individual income taxes. And I've said this for decades.
Yeah.
They want to get to the point where here's how much money you make. Give us a percentage of it.
That's
and I don't mean net it. I mean made.
Yeah, even if you look at the most recent tax bill, that's, I mean, they got rid of a lot of deductions that used to be able to take. So,
yeah, you know what not started surprising. That? The first example that I can think of that started that, the revenue tax, was in Obamacare with the medical devices tax.
Mm-hmm.
That was 2% on revenues.
Right.
And that is a big, hairy camel's nose under the tent right there.
It's that doesn't work for business, though, because no. you have grocery stores that make profits of 1% to 3% versus Apple, which who knows what – I haven't looked at their profit margin recently, but it's a lot higher than that. So it's not a really a proper way to do taxation that I can see. But
no, it's only one proper way.
Anyway, there are several stocks that you can invest in. Some of them – a lot of them take advantage of the Canadian market, which is a little bit more developed at this point. And the largest one, Canopy Growth, CGC, has a year-to-date return of 28.8%, so not too bad. But most of these, Insys Therapeutics, INSY, down 26% this year. Kronos Group, it's on the NASDAQ, and it is down 11% this year. And then there's a fiber processing company called Hemp, H-E-M-P,
mm-hmm.
year-to-date up a little over 6%.
Yeah, Mitch McConnell's pushing that.
There's a few ETFs and mutual funds that are out there as well. Horizons Marijuana Life Science Index, HMMJ, it's out of Toronto. Year to date, down just 0.5%. And actually, most of them look like that. There's one called Seed, S-E-E-D, of course.
Naturally.
It trades on the Toronto Stock Exchange. It's up 17% this year, but it's tiny, like millions of dollars under management, not AUM. It's really small. So there wasn't, I couldn't find anything that jumped off the page that looked like, yes, this is what I need to get into right now.
Tell me, but there's still nothing with the ticker symbol TCP out there.
Not that I've seen, no.
Oh, come on, people. I thought you were more innovative than that.
Do you mean THC?
THC.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's taken already. I'm not sure. But that was not one that we found in our research.
They might think it's toxic. I'm not
yeah,
sure.
But I'm going to keep watching this. I know at some point there's going to be a viable way to get into this industry, and I, like many others, would be willing to take a chance on it. So I'm going to keep everyone updated and do this every 6 months or so.
Well, we know people care because of the number of inquiries we get about it.
It's amazing, and it's not just millennials or Gen X. It is across the age spectrum. I mean, I've had 80-year-olds ask me about this.
What I've seen with the people I see lately is that there's not much talk about cryptocurrency anymore, but there's
no.
a lot of talk about the marijuana industry. So mm-hmm. it's the fad or whatever. I'm awfully glad to see people letting go of the crypto.
Yeah, it's
no good can come of this.
That was definitely a fad that I'm happy to see more or less passed.
Governments are on the case that the number of people reporting gains and losses on their tax returns for cryptos is under 0.1%. But the number of people owning some is about 4%. Now, that means there's a lot of unreported transactions going around, and a lot of them are probably done in crypto, who knows. But it tells me that a government who wants its tax revenue, who understands that this is going on, is going to be looking for it.
Yeah.
China already outlawed it. They outlawed cryptocurrencies. But you know what they're doing? They're inventing their own.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So they can tax it.
They outlawed everybody else's, invented their own so they can tax it.
Yeah. Can't say that's a bad strategy, really.
Good to be the king.
Yeah.
I thought you'd get a kick out of that. I forgot to mention the trivia question is sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 636-7888. And it is, what percentage of Americans have no will and no trust? And it's above 50 and under 100. It's also a bit age-related, and I'll explain all that. You know how things like that, estate planning in general, they'll put people to sleep pretty much immediately. But they shouldn't, because it's really important. We all have things. We all have wishes. We want them to be known. It may come as a surprise to a lot of young people, but not everyone who dies is old. There are such things as mortality charts. You can see them in the insurance industry. And there will be people who don't survive the year at every age group. Don't let it be you if you have things that you would like to dispose of properly. Now, very quietly, no fanfare whatsoever, on May 24th, President Trump signed a bill called the Economic Growth, Regulatory Relief, and Consumer Protection Act. And what that is the culmination, I guess the first level culmination of something I've been talking a lot about. You remember my disdain for the Dodd-Frank bill and how it was onerous to things like regional banks. This is the first start on rolling back some of the provisions of Dodd-Frank. Now, that has implications not just for local banking, but it has things, provisions in it that are going to help you, your kids, your identity, and your ability to get loans and everything else associated with it. And I'm going to talk about that when we get back. This is a wonderful piece of legislation known to very few people, and we got to get the word out because there are things in here that make so much sense that no one ever thinks about, and that used to include me, but not anymore. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment is brought to you by Robinson Landscape Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794. Too hot to do it yourself. Let Troy sweat, I figure. All right. Trivia questions still out there. 904-222-TALK, 222-8255, along with any subjects you want to cover. All right. On the 24th of May, with very little fanfare, the president signed the Economic Growth, Regulatory Relief, and Consumer Protection Act. There are some things in here everyone should know about, but I'm going to start with a question. How many of you have children with Social Security numbers? Trick question. 100% of people who have children with Social Security numbers because it's mandated, has been for decades now, and that's how you identify people for things such as 529 plans, which can start quite literally at the birth of the child. Guess who knows that kids have Social Security numbers? That would be identity thieves. So here's the newest little trick that identity thieves are coming up with. They do their phishing schemes, whatever it is, and they find Social Security numbers they belong to kids who are too young to work, so they're not being used. They then create a new identity around that Social Security number, which is a valid number, and they start ripping off whatever they can rip off. So a few months ago, weeks ago, whatever, there were some states that got together and said, you know, you ought to be able to do a credit freeze on your kids, too. And a few states did adopt that. Well, as of the 24th of May, it has now been made federal law that every state has to allow you to do the credit freeze for your children. Remember me saying about a year ago that when it comes to freezing your credit, if you're 65 or over, it's free. Well, on May 24th, it became mandate again that all credit freezes are going to be free. So I'm telling you, A, do it, and B, you won't have to pay for it. Now, what I told Adam a minute ago, I'm not sure if you have to pay to thaw them for a while. And what that means is if you got your credit frozen and you are looking to acquire credit, you're buying a car or house or something like that, potential lender will not be able to research your credit because it's frozen. So you then have to call the agency and say, look, so-and-so is going to be asking about mine, and it's okay for a few days, and then it freezes back up again. I don't know if that's free or not. So if you're going to freeze it, remember that if you're right about to apply for some credit, you probably just should wait until after you do that. Other than that, if you have no plans like that, freeze your credit. It can't hurt a thing, and it can help you protect against identity theft, which, as you know, is a big deal for all of us and something that we've been very concerned about on the show and in the company. If you want to know more about this, one of the great websites out there is ClarkHoward.com. A lot of you know him. He's a local, and he has his consumer sites, including things like this, are absolutely wonderful, and I thank him for putting this all together and getting me interested in it. But here are three things that you can expect now from this new consumer law, which rolls back, as I said, some of the onerous provisions of Dodd-Frank, which was a tremendous overreaction to the problems we had in the mortgage industry back in 6, 7, 8. The first one, along with free credit freezes, fraud alerts, which are currently only 90 days, will be extended to 1 year and be free as well. Consumers will be able to opt for 7-year fraud alerts. Come September, TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian will all have a web page on their respective websites for requesting fraud alerts and credit freezes. That's nice, because you used to have to chase them around a little bit. The FTC will also post links to those at, and this is a site everybody should know, identitytheft.gov. Also, if you're an active member of the military, within 1 year, the major credit reporting agencies must offer free electronic credit monitoring to you. So there are a lot of nice provisions, and I haven't even gotten into the effect on the local banks, the smaller banks, which is going to be wonderful. It deregulates some of the provisions that they put in, I would argue, to prevent them from making loans to real people, although a lot of people would probably fault my logic on that. But it has deregulated an awful lot of what the small banks do. You will now have better luck obtaining a loan if you're a small business or seeking a mortgage or whatever from a local institution. And it hits small regional banks. It hits credit unions. And in general, we're just going to be a lot better off. There is much more to be done by way of ridding this world of the Dodd-Frank bill. But this is a good start, and I'm very grateful that it was actually a little bit bipartisan, too, because your Democrats get hurt as well as Republicans when they're overregulated. So that went my way at this point. When they're done with Dodd-Frank, then I would strongly suggest they go back and take a look at some earlier ones, shall we say, like Sarbanes-Oxley. All these things come, they emanate from the mood of Congress. Whenever there's an issue, a big issue out there, Congress gets this undeniable feeling that they have to, quote, do something. Very often, actually, this relates directly to our day-to-day business. When there's a shock in the market, 2016, when it opens up and falls sharply, sometimes the very hardest thing for people like us to do is to do nothing when we're absolutely convinced that that's the right thing to do. Well, Congress suffers from that all the time. They always feel like they have to do something, and that leads us frequently to that thing that everybody knows about called unintended consequences. And there have been many unintended consequences of Dodd-Frank and Sarbanes-Oxley, and there have been a lot of unintended consequences since the repeal of Glass-Steagall under the Clinton administration. I wish they would put that back in. And all of these impact you as a consumer by making it more difficult for you to do the things that you're trying to do. So hooray, hooray for deregulation, and it'll get better and better, I think. Speaking of Congress and doing something, the opposite of feeling the need to, quote, do something is Social Security and Medicare, where they seem to have the absolute need to do nothing.
Yeah.
Well, a recent report kind of should be an eye-opener, and it says now that the going broke dates for Medicare and Social Security are not out in the future quite as far as we thought they were. In
Shocking.
Fact, I know it is. Medicare is projected now to be insolvent in 2026. Now, I can take 18 away from 26 and get a very small number. So, and I think you all can too. Now, if you have a problem that's going to occur in 8 years, and it is such a huge problem that it impacts every single American over 65 and disabled, now I would feel that feeling that I absolutely, positively had to do something. They don't, but they should. And I will say this on Paul Ryan's exit year, right after I say, thank God he's leaving, He has been leading the charge in Congress to try to get something done about the entitlement plans, and he has failed miserably because you all know the old line about the third rail of politics. Well, the third rail on the trains is the electrified one. You touch it, you're dead. And that has been the way for politicians. If you suggest a change to Social Security or Medicare, you will be unelected just as sure as Carter makes little pills. It doesn't get any better when we talk about Social Security. That will become insolvent in 2034. Now, I can also subtract 18 from 34 and get a pretty small number. And a lot of you listening, and one of them in this room, can add that number to his own age and say, I'm not even there yet. And at that point, the entire Social Security system is going to have a big old haircut, including the people currently getting it. And there's not a darn thing you can do about it. They will not have the money to pay 100% of the benefits. It has to change. It's easy to change. It's difficult only in one sense, and that is the political sense. We have to get over this, people. We have to address it, and we have to do it now. We have $82 trillion in Social Security unfunded. I'll finish it up when we get back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Just a reminder that the trivia question is out there. What percentage of Americans have no will and no trust? Wrapping up this problem with our fringe benefits, there are $82 trillion shortfall, is $82 trillion shortfall in the fund. That's more than four times the size of the total U.S. GDP. It's going to result in getting less Social Security benefits, and I'm not sure exactly how they're going to handle the Medicare. What they would have to do is increase co-pays because they're not going to be able to pay out 100% of the assets. And they've been doing this now because they started spending this money. Adam and I were talking in the break. They started spending the money. The accounting says they're going to run out of that money. They don't, of course, actually have the cash. It's a pay-in, pay-out system. Every time you send a paycheck in, they send it to me. Thank you very much. And it's going to keep on that way, but it's not in balance. And in fact, this year, the system will pay out more than it takes in. I do think the Trump economy is going to delay these numbers maybe a year or two because there are so many more people working, paying into the system. I can't verify that because you figure with 10, 12, 13, 14,000 people retiring a day, there's a lot of people going into taking benefits right now. So it's hard to say. But I do fault the American people to some extent, but Adam pointed out to me that we're not alone.
We are not. If you've been following the events in Central America, Nicaragua in particular, there's been some real violence down there. 170 people are dead in clashes between Ortega is the president down there and his army versus the protesters. Guess what all that was started by? Ortega decided to slash pension benefits to cover a widening Social Security gap. Exactly what we're talking about. The people, it turns out, didn't like that idea and decided to protest. Those protests turned violent. Next thing you know, you've got a bunch of dead people. It's really sad.
How do you get out of a problem like this? You can spend less. That won't happen. You can pay in more. They won't let that happen. Mm-mm. More people working helps a bit, but Trump also promised that he would not cut any benefits, so that's not helping at all, and the people don't want them cut. When we got our last Social Security fix in the 80s with Reagan, it changed things so that not everybody from here on in would have full retirement 65. It went up to 66 and then 67. It'll get there for people born after 1954. That helps. We need to do it again. We've added so much to life expectancy. That's the real crux of the problem, but it won't save Medicare either. We've got to do something drastic, and the people don't like it, whether they're Nicaraguans or Americans. They don't like it. It's got to get done, or we'll have another panic crisis thing, and then they'll want to, quote, do something, and I can't imagine how badly they could botch that.
I mean, I could definitely see, maybe not on the level of Nicaragua, but there could be civil unrest in the United States over something like this. Very. And also, you may wonder how the tax cuts affect this, and the truth is, mm-hmm. They do, but they shouldn't, because this is designed to be a separate system.
Right. And that's where we were also talking about when Obama had the payroll tax holiday. That money came out of Social Security and Medicare, which makes it the dumbest idea in the world.
Such a bad idea, and he got such a free pass on it. No one ever called him out on it.
Yeah.
Terrible idea.
I hate to say it, but Clinton decreased the problem a little bit when he raised taxes on wealthier Social Security recipients. They went up to 85% of your Social Security taxable.
Right.
And it seems like a terrible thing, but I promise you one thing, it's going to be 100% taxable pretty soon.
It almost has to.
It's the first line of defense. All right, we had an email from a listener this past week who asked a question. Our trade imbalance seems to be a timely conversation, but while I know the various impacts of tariffs, et cetera, what's the economic impact of a major trade imbalance like the one we have with China, even if we get to a, quote, fair trade structure from a tariff standpoint? We talked about the tariffs that are going to hit on July 6th. You kind of have to understand some of the terminology here to get it. Trade means the sale of goods and services to various countries and companies across your geographic boundaries. Imports cross over on the way in. Exports cross the border on the way out. Now, that's different than globalization. They're often used the same, but globalization also includes social, cultural, political, and legal phenomena. We're just talking about money here, your money. So this is purely regarding trade. We went a long ways from when this country started out as an agrarian society where 90-whatever percent of people were engaged in feeding everybody. Then the Industrial Revolution changed it all, so we have now taken that 90-odd percent of people involved in farming down to 2%. I was thinking this morning, I grew up and went to grade school with a whole bunch of farmers.
Well, you also grew up in rural Wisconsin, so
that's
there's
true
that.
Too. So there is something to that. But nowadays, do you even know a farmer anymore?
No, I don't think so.
There are more people who work for the Department of Agriculture than there are farmers.
That's crazy.
And that's what happens because the big corporations got into food production, and they're so good at it, they don't need the labor. So when we started to turn industrial, what was happening? Well, the returns, can you name the four factors of production?
I do, but now you put me on the spot.
There you go. Most people have forgotten it from econ. But land, labor, capital, and entrepreneurship. Well, who was making the money? The returns were big to land in the early days because land grew the food. Well, that started to become less and less, so the industrial society came along, and who was the winner there? Well, the people with capital and entrepreneurship. They would buy what they needed in terms of land and labor, and they were getting rich through industrialization. It was great for them. What the heck? It was also great for the country because it made a lot of people wealthy, raised the general lifestyle, but labor wasn't getting paid very much, which caused in itself the invention of the labor union, which was there to say the labor isn't getting its returns like it should. So it was an absolute necessity, and like most things that are necessities, they run their course, and now, of course, it's getting less and less important to have them out there. The returns now, labor's returns are higher, but they're not doing all that well in that society, which is why we're losing our industrialization while we've now become an information society. So now the returns are coming to such things as white-collar labor. So where are we going with this? Economics and trade. When I grew up in econ, we always talked about GNP, gross national product. And what that was all the goods and services produced in this country plus net exports. We were the largest exporter in the world. We exported far more than we imported. So to accurately reflect the level of our GNP, we had to take that difference and add it in. So we made more than we used. It was really cool. Well, that changed over time as things started moving overseas. So now they changed it to GDP, gross domestic production, and that takes into account the fact that we're now importing more than we're sending out. So we have a trade imbalance. That's what a trade imbalance is. It was an imbalance when we exported more, but it was to our favor. And it's a trade imbalance now, only it's not to our favor anymore, so it's a deficit. What the tariffs are doing are trying to equalize that. We're trying to get it back into some kind of balance. So it's a threat placed on other countries that we're going to charge them extra when they bring things in here, because right now we don't, but they charge ours to go there. The classic example being the dairy products in Canada. We have to pay to them 270% tariff to export our dairy to them, and we don't charge them coming in. It's unfair to our farmers. But that's not the real problem. The problem is money. When you have a trade imbalance such as we have, we send more money overseas than we bring back in. That means those people, I'm talking about the Chinese right now, but there are other countries involved in different aspects, they are now buying America. I like to buy American. They're buying America. The things they own now start at Smithfield Foods and go down the line. They own vast tracts of real estate, big buildings. They're buying up America. We can't have that forever if we want to maintain our sovereignty and our sanity. That's the problem with trade imbalance. We've got to get our money back home. We've done it in energy, finally. We became energy independent. Now we're going to try to do it on other goods, including technology. And I hope that answers the question. 60% of you have no will and no trust. Shame on you. It's age-related. 78% of millennials, 64% of Gen X, 42% of baby boomers, and older people, 72 and up, pretty good. Only 19% of them don't have a will or a trust. Start thinking about it. It isn't that hard. There are online sources you can use. You can call planners. But if you're getting your advice on these things from a commission salesman in a brokerage house or an insurance company, you might want to check around and get some more independent advice from perhaps a fee-only CFP like Vanway Financial. All right, it's over already. Sorry. Same time next week. Happy Father's Day. This is the Vanway Financial Hour.